Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So a lot of champions retaining their titles tonight. Jake, did Fyter Fest ultimately feel like a big special show to you? What was your kind of overall take after 2 hours of part one, night one of Fyter Fest?
I thought it was good. I didn't leave the show blown away by what I had seen. There was obviously some quality action, and I think that's what a lot of people tune into AEW for. But there were some clunky matches and clunky finishes and maybe predictable finishes throughout the show. And so while I enjoyed what I saw and I liked the action, I didn't leave thinking, man, this was a really dynamic and creative wrestling show. It just kind of felt like it upheld the status quo in a lot of ways.
Yeah, to me this felt like they you know, pointed a camera at a ring and let the wrestlers go out there and have the first 2 hours of a four-hour pay-per-view, which felt like the first 2 hours of a potentially good but not necessarily great pay-per-view. The thing that I was, I guess, most disappointed by is I just don't think they did a good job building up the matches as the show progressed or building up next week's lineup. And I'm not saying like they're waving the white flag on the ratings or anything like that, but it took some of the wind out of the sails of, you know, how are these two shows going to do up against each other? Because it just kind of, especially with the announcement by Jim Ross and then subsequently Taz talking about Jon Moxley taking an extra week because Renee Young, well, they didn't explicitly say this, but Renee Young has tested positive for COVID-19. That news broke from her last week on social media. And so he's taking one more week, hopefully only one more week off for the safety of his fellow wrestlers. So I don't know. It kind of, I was watching this just going, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what our major talking points are for a post show. I don't want people not to stay tuned because, I mean, we're going to talk about everything. But there wasn't just one thing jumping off the page, either really high or really low. It felt like, hey, we got these matches. Now you guys go out there and do your thing. But really over the course of the first hour and a half, they did nothing to make me care about that main event. You know, Trent's mom driving him to the building like a high school dance and kissing Trent on the cheek was cute. But, and then that Paige and Omega interview did nothing. You know, Kenny's still doing a half-hearted version of his post-New Japan speech that, you know, a huge percentage of the audience doesn't even know what it means. And those who do, I don't think it makes them more excited about the title defense. So, yeah, it just was sort of, it to me, it felt like, yeah, if you like some good wrestling, you got some good wrestling. But it felt flat not only this week, but also in terms of promoting next week.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I think the match that most surpassed my expectations might have been the women's championship match.
Yeah.
I thought Ford and Sheeta did a really nice job. But I think everything else was kind of either at or kind of below expectations. And that's not to say that everybody didn't work hard. It's just I didn't think there was enough, you know, creative force around what was happening to really sell me on a lot of the near falls, especially in the main event. You know, I really wanted to be able to buy into the drama, but they never really convinced me that Trent and Chuck had a shot. And I think that was probably the most significant failure of that match.
This, to me, in a way, was the equivalent of WWE Raw when they would go to England. Like, for some reason, the creative team just sort of threw in the towel. They didn't do in-ring promos. They just would present matches, and sometimes they were good matches. Like, I'm not saying they were bad shows, but there wasn't a real creative density. And, of course, when you have an essentially what would have been a pay-per-view or a live weekend special on, you know, when you put the weeks of hype that they did into this, this is supposed to be a payoff for it and feel like a payoff of big-time matches. But I don't know. You know, like you said, I just wasn't convinced that a title change was likely in any of the scenarios. I thought the most likely title change would have been Jake Hager winning, but even that felt really small. So, yeah. But again, you know, I mean, it's not like I'm saying it was a bad show. I mean, the 2 hours went by and it's smoothly and quickly in a good way. And I thought there was enough good wrestling. I didn't think anything was great. But I thought it was good. You know, it was just sort of good. But it felt I wanted to be blown away. You know, I wanted them to put their best effort out in terms of production values and energy, and getting me excited about what was coming up next and what was coming up next week. And it felt pretty paint by numbers as far as that goes.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong there. I think AEW does a really nice job most weeks of making the product in the ring, you know, feel fairly exciting. Like, they always push a pretty quick pace, you know, and typically the wrestlers hold up their end of the deal. I think there was points tonight, like during the private party and Santana and Ortiz match, where they kind of lost me. You know, there was a real lack of selling and some clumsiness in that match. And I think there were points in the Hager and Cody match where it was really obvious that they hadn't done enough work building up that feud, because it didn't really rise to the point of feeling personal. And I think Cody Rhodes definitely loses something when he is not in front of a live crowd. There's just something about his act in particular that stands out as being, I guess, missing a pretty big element of it when he's unable to feed off of a crowd's energy, because his ring work hasn't really changed a great deal from his days in WWE, when I think a lot of people perceived him as a guy who was going to be stuck in the mid card forever. But I think he's done such a great job with his character work that he's managed to vastly surpass that perception of him. But I think he might be reverting back to the mean somewhat without the ability to play to a crowd and deliver those big time promos.
All right. Well, very good. Let's pause, introduce the show, and give out the phone numbers and go to phone calls. We've got a lot of people lined up on the phone banks. We've got some emails to get to also. If you disagree with us, speak up. If you agree with us on everything, chime in too with your comments. Our number, I'll give it out before introductions here, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. If it works better for you, you can email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. We'll be back here on Friday night with another live post show after SmackDown. So I hope you'll join us then also if you're listening live. If you haven't joined us live yet and you want to, you absolutely can join us by clicking on the link either on our Twitter feed at pwtorch or the link at the top of my TV report during Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown each week at pwtorch.com, our main website. So you can find direct links to our live stream there, or you can just call our number and listen in from your phone. Let's introduce the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, July 1st, 2020. Jake, did you know it's Canada Day? Happy Canada Day.
Yeah, I've seen quite a bit of Canada Day material on Twitter today. And of course, Jericho wore his very gaudy Canada jacket on commentary, which was over the top and hilarious.
I it slowed down as the show went on, but I think in the first 10 minutes, we got about 12 references to Happy Canada Day from Jericho. So so anyway, Happy Canada to our Canadian listeners, and really Happy Canada Day to everybody. So I'm Wade Keller, host of the program, editor of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and pwtorch.com, and host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, the VIP Daily Wade Keller Hotline, the Fix with Todd Martin, and post-pay-per-view roundtables and much more. We hope you'll go VIP if you enjoy our approach to covering wrestling. Joining me as co-host tonight is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net, regular co-host here on the show, especially on Wednesdays. Jake, thanks for joining us today as co-host.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. He'll talk more about ProWrestling.net later on and the shows that he's part of and the writing that he does. But let's get to phone calls. Let's not wait any longer here. And we will open with area code. Let's see. Let's do 323. Looks like you're up first. 323, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is Harry from Las Vegas, Nevada, VIP member.
Harry, thank you for calling. Thank you for being a VIP member. What'd you think of Fyter Fest Dynamite tonight?
I enjoyed the show. I mean, I won't say that I was the biggest fan of it. Like your co-host said, there were points of some matches that kind of like lost me, and I think from one of the points that we mentioned last week, like some of the promos and backstage videos and all that kind of stuff that usually keeps you engaged, I missed it this week. Do you feel that was the case? I mean, besides the Darby Allin stuff, which was amazing. Do you think this show missed that part?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, on the Blue Brand show, the Wakefield Pro Wrestling podcast, Eric Kroll and Nate Lindberg joined me for a roundtable preview of week one and week two. So I encourage everybody to download it and check it out if you haven't yet. We talk about the lineups for both weeks. I'll put it that way. And just kind of an overview of the state of the companies and some ratings talk. And, you know, I said there's a chance that this will be stripped down, you know, that it'll just be the matches, but that I was hoping that they would take advantage of all the hype that they did to build up Fighter Fest to hope, you know, have a bigger audience, hopefully, than last week from their perspective, which was their lowest, and do a good job keeping people excited about what's coming up on the show and also building up next week. And none of that was there. I don't know if they were nervous about pre-tapes. Maybe they'd study their minute by minutes and think that, you know, the in-ring wrestling is where they're going to keep people tuned in a more competitive environment. So they just went all the way with that. Jake, your thoughts on the lack of video segments other than, you know, a TAS scouting report with Brian Cage and the Darby Allin video. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if we count a car arriving with Trent's mom dropping him off or not, but I mean, there just wasn't a lot else other than pointing a camera at the ring.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that. I guess I wasn't too surprised given that, you know, they like to give their matches, you know, consistently longer length than what you typically see on an NXT show. I don't think there was a match on this show that was less than 10 minutes. And so there was just fewer precious minutes available of television time to dedicate to video packages and the like. So I think that is their strategy. I think you might be right about them believing that their in-ring product is what keeps viewers on the television, because they were very, you know, insistent about pushing the fact that they, you know, they're staying with the action with picture in picture and don't turn away and that kind of thing. And so I think they're probably very cognizant of the fact that they're in a ratings battle, and they think that their ring work is what draws people into that show.
I do have to say it meant a lot more Chris Jericho than other shows where there's been more video features, especially during the Georgia tapings, where, you know, they had to go heavy on pre-tapes and out-of-ring stuff. Jake, how did Jericho work for you on commentary tonight? Was it too much of a good thing, or there's no such thing as too much of Jericho on commentary? How did it work?
You know, I think much like my feelings on Mauro Ranallo at times, he has a tendency of being omnipresent on commentary, where he's just always commenting on everything all the time, and it's difficult for, like, Excalibur and Shivani in particular felt like they took a back seat to Jericho while he was out there. And maybe, you know, that's what the company wanted, because they felt like, you know, having Jericho's star power on commentary would be a boost for the show. But I think it did screw up the chemistry of the announce team a little bit, although, you know, maybe having Jericho there and his humor and, you know, his personality was worth it. I guess we'll have to see how many viewers they might have picked up when the ratings come out tomorrow.
They had Jericho had some good lines during it. He was complaining about Arn Anderson standing in front of the ring post and said, "Is that legal? Is it legal to stand there when I don't know, when whoever was trying to whip somebody into the ring post?" What match was that? Was it during set?
Oh, it was Hager and Cody, right?
It had to be Cody because Arn's out there, of course. I just answered my own question when I was setting that up. Yeah. And he also was a lot of the Canada Day stuff. There was a line where he said limited commercials, but unlimited talent on AEW Dynamite. I mean, like, just there was, to me, I felt like if you weren't paying attention, you would miss some witty comments from Jericho. There was a time when in the women's match where he said, "I like when Penelope kicks Sheeta in the head. That's a good move." And of course, the Jericho delivery is a big part of it, but he just found a way to, I thought, add a layer of energy and wit to the commentary. I wouldn't want it every week. I want it to feel special when he's out there, but I thought he hit way more than he missed. And I'm glad that they put Orange Cassidy out there. I thought his line, "Never trust a man in tails," I've been saying that for years, was cool during the private party match. So to me, it worked, but I'm not sure I would go with him next week even. You know, I mean, especially because he has a match. I think that, you know, 1 week is good, and make it feel special when it happens. Because I think, like a lot of color commentators who are that strong in their that their presence is felt so much, there's diminishing returns pretty quickly. But I thought tonight it worked. Harry, back to you.
So actually, in my opinion, Jericho was A+, and a big part of it is because I really enjoy how he sells you on the wrestlers and how he puts over all the talent, and it gives you a little bit more credibility when Jericho says it. Of course, Shivani, Excalibur, and JR are great at their jobs, but you're talking about a guy that's still in the ring. So that for me is like when he talks great about MJF, about Jungle Boy, about Luchasaurus, about Wardlow, about both female wrestlers that were in action tonight. It gives them a little bit more of that credibility. It's like Jericho is saying that, and he's great putting the other every talent over, even if they're baby faces, with those little like negative comments, but good negative comments. So I'll give Jericho that props. It's very good with him. And talking about the women's match, Penelope Ford, I would say she's one of the people that really took advantage of when the pandemic started and they started doing those shows in Georgia and QT Marshall School. She was one of the few females out there, and she was wrestling more because of that. And also her fiance, Kip Sabian, they were getting TV time. And I think she actually deserved this match, and she did a great job in this match. What do you think has gone into Penelope Ford getting better and earning these spots?
Yeah, Jake, if you mentioned it that, you know, the women's match was probably the highlight of the show. Akira Shida, I think, has shown me she's the right person to have the championship right now. She's not going to sell tickets on bombastic promos, but overall, I think that she's shown she's just a good representation, a good representation of women's wrestling, the title. She can have really good matches. Penelope Ford delivered tonight too, playing her part in that match. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think she is remarkably consistent. She has good matches pretty much every time that she's out there. I'm struggling to think of anything that I thought, you know, man, she really let down, you know, the participants in her match with her. There's been a couple of four ways and things of that nature that, you know, have just been clunky because they asked the women to do too much. But it's hard to think of a Shida match where she didn't go out there and deliver on expectations. And I think Ford has rapidly improved. I'm not sure if it was the time that she, you know, that they spent in Georgia at QT Marshall School, or if she's just showing off the fact that she's been improving the entire time that that AEW has been in existence. But I think she more than held up her end of this match. There weren't any, you know, other than I think there was one stunner that she hit that was a little light, but other than that, everything looked really good, and they didn't ask them to do anything outrageous. You know, there weren't many spots in this match that gave them an opportunity to really fall short on execution. And I think of all the matches on this show, this one probably had the most mystery to me about who the winner was going to be. And I think they managed to work in some near falls that were creative and fun and actually added to the drama of the match.
Yep. I agree with all that. Harry, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, so absolutely. The women's match was one of the big highlights of the show, but I was pleasantly surprised with the opening match of this show, of this Dynamite, the Fighter Fest edition. Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy against MJF and Wardlow completely did an amazing job. It was my favorite match, and maybe that's why for me it went from a great show to going downhill, because I don't know how they could have done any better than that first match. So do you think the placement was good, or they just did such a great job that nobody was able to follow it up?
Jake, your thoughts on that opener? We haven't spent much time on it.
Yeah, I don't think I'm quite as high on it as that. I mean, I thought it was good, and I think they managed to push a really good pace. But at the same time, I think they really sacrificed a lot of selling in that match for the pace. There were points where I think Luchasaurus hit a sit-down powerbomb on MJF, and then he immediately stood up and landed a super kick and then sold, and I was like, what was going on there? But the person who really stood out in that match to me was Jungle Boy. I think he's well on his way to being a major star if they can get behind him. I think it might take repackaging him a little bit because Jungle Boy is just not a gimmick that I see being in the main event at any point. But I think Jack Perry, the guy, is on his way to being a big star.
That could be why Jim Ross keeps trying to insert that name in there, because in his mind he thinks that's, you know, Jungle Boy's future is breaking away from that gimmick and that name. You could say Heartbreak Kid shouldn't stick with somebody in their 40s, but it did. Young Bucks, when they came out, it was Matt Nick Jackson, the announcer said, not the Young Bucks, initially, because, you know, they're not quite as young as they used to be. So sometimes a nickname will stick with you, but sometimes seem kind of strange. But if you're over enough, it works. But I think he's at a point of his career where it does seem like it might be limiting based on, I agree with you, Jake, what he's showing. I thought in the match, the four-person kip-up spot was contrived and not worth, you know, from a cost-benefit ratio, I thought it cost more than the benefit because it just felt so contrived, like they worked it out ahead of time. And I'm just not a fan of spots like that. On a personal level, I just think it takes me out of the match. That said, I get what Harry's saying because there was a lot of good in that match. And I thought, you know, to open with that, because yesterday we were thinking they would open with one of the two, most likely either the TNT title match or the tag team title match because of the star power and backstory in those. And I was an advocate for having MJF cut a promo earlier in the show to sell the match for later. But they just had MJF cut a promo before the match and went right to it. I don't think there's any like obvious criticism of the match order that they win. But if this match wasn't good, I would have been, you know, I think it would have made it seem like the wrong call because it didn't feel like I must see this match because of what's at stake. But I think that the action delivered enough for sure that I think it should hold the audience well. I haven't looked over at what NXT did in terms of match order. I'll be watching that show later tonight, but I think that it's a type of action and mix of styles and personalities that should hold an audience pretty well. So I don't second guess AEW's decision to go with that first. Harry, any closing words from you?
Yeah. So I just wanted to say, I enjoyed the show. It wasn't the best edition that I was probably expecting, but then I go back to last year and Fyter Fest wasn't a pay-per-view. Fyter Fest was, I think, just a follow-up show from, their first Double or Nothing as a company as AEW. So thinking about it that way, maybe it feels more important because the competition was trying to get a reacted to AEW doing their thing. So I enjoyed the show. It wasn't the best that I think it was, but then where the situation is, I'll say it was fun. And thank you guys for taking my call. Everybody go VIP. It's absolutely worth it.
Thanks, Harry. Appreciate it. pwtorch.com/govip. You can find out details on what VIP membership entails. This wasn't meant to be their one of their two or three marquee shows of the year. And I wasn't judging. I'm not judging it on that standard by any means. In fact, I'm kind of judging it on a more typical Dynamite standard. Was it a really good episode of Dynamite or not? Because really, when all said and done, having a TNT title defended on the show, having a women's title defended on the show, having a tag title defended on the show, in and of themselves, two out of those three things happening on a Dynamite wouldn't feel all that strange. Maybe three of those things happening on a Dynamite makes it feel like it's something more. Part one didn't jump off the page. And then the impact of Moxley not wrestling next week, Jake, is certainly, you know, has an impact on the marquee ratings battle. What's your kind of instant reaction to how that affects the Great American Bash Fyter Fest 2-week ratings battle?
Well, it'll certainly have an impact. I think they added the second tag team championship defense to next week's show, probably in order to fill whatever time would have been taken up by Cage and Moxley. And so it sounds like that is the replacement, but it's tough because I don't think AEW did an incredible job of really hammering home a lot of the stories for this show, and next week feels much the same. I think Jericho and Orange Cassidy might be the program that stands out as getting, you know, the most television time, and I think that's a problem. You know, I wish these feuds felt higher profile than they did, and so I'm assuming that AEW will probably get some of its audience back for these Fyter Fest shows, but it'll probably be closer than a lot of people think.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, let's go to our next call. We'll go to 314 next. 314, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Jason from St. Louis. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. Good to hear from you. So what'd you think of Fyter Fest tonight?
So honestly, I did not watch it. So I was watching NXT, and I'm not going to give spoilers because you advise not to.
Correct.
So I did switch back and forth. And the first time I switched during the first commercial of NXT, I thought, well, why hasn't Vince McMahon built a outdoor arena? Because the presentation of Dynamite or Fyter Fest, it was better than the dark NXT. You know, the black clothes thing versus the open-air venue of Fyter Fest. But then I saw all these people around ringside, shoulder to shoulder, maybe one every other was wearing masks. I was like, okay, I'm going to switch back because they don't get it. And I wasn't a fan
Jake,
of...
Jake, we had... Let me jump in on that. Pause there. Jake, Taz mentioned we don't run a sloppy shop around here in reference, you know, kind of taking a dig at the fact that Renee Young came up with COVID-19, where AEW doesn't let wrestlers or anyone be around each other until they're tested. And they've been doing that for a long time, actual tests, not just a temperature check. And are you being a good boy or girl, not going to bars and asking, you know, them questions about being careful while they travel, whatever that means. And so AEW feels they're on the high ground here. Jim Ross said, wear masks. And then they were quick to point out, which they did not last week, hey, we're out. And he said, wear masks indoors and in public and especially indoors. AEW looks at what they're doing as a closed set event in which every single person has been tested outdoors and open air. And they believe that that is enough cover to not social space or wear masks. And by explaining it, that might help people who, you know, who heard Ross and Shivani have that conversation. They might think, oh, okay, yeah, I guess it is outdoors and it's not public, it's closed set and everybody's been tested, so the rules are different for them. WWE has plexiglass, now mandatory mask wearing. You know, in a way, it's, you know, late to the party for sure, but they are indoors and they are testing everybody, but they're still having people wear masks. They have the plexiglass separation, but they still are social spacing. They're both approaching this remarkably different, Jake. Is one doing a better job? Are they both doing a poor job? Like, how do you evaluate that? Because I can totally understand where Jason's coming from, tuning in and going, what's going on? That's not supposed to be happening in the summer of 2020. There shouldn't be a group of people clustered next to each other, shoulder to shoulder, at any kind of entertainment event.
Yeah, from an optics standpoint, if you're just watching the show, I think you probably have to give NXT credit for doing, you know, they're late to the party, obviously. WWE had an abysmal record up until a week ago when it came to testing and mask wearing and things of that nature. But it's good that they're doing it now. I guess I think from an optics standpoint, I think it would look better if AEW was at least paying, you know, some attention to those rules on their show. But I do think that they overall probably are justified in feeling like they have the high ground. They've been testing for weeks. You know, they're probably restricting talent travel as much as possible. And so they're, you know, they probably are the better of the two in terms of their approach, at least over the long term. They can be reasonably assured that that everybody at those tapings has been tested and is not going to be spreading infection. But I mean, I think if you're going back to the beginning of this pandemic, WWE's track record is just abysmal, and there's no really other way to put it.
What do you think is going to be the trajectory of Major League Sports opening up? During AEW Dynamite tonight on TNT, there was an ad for the NBA coming back at the end of July. There's Major League Baseball players opting out of playing because they don't want to be away from their families during this time. Some certainly would be concerned about health risks. Where does wrestling has been doing fit into where you think sports is going as the summer progresses?
Well, I think you'll probably see some of the approaches that AEW has taken, for instance, probably be used in the case of the NBA, where they're doing a closed campus and it's secured from outside visitors, and they're going to be doing routine testing, and they're going to be quarantining people. You know, everybody who has been coming into the camp has been getting tested and told to stay home if they are positive, and they're doing contact tracing and things of that nature. And so I think it's probably going to be the case, like you mentioned, with Major League Baseball, where players have, you know, the flexibility to opt out. I don't think you're going to see a major sports league force people to play, just because from a PR perspective, that looks absolutely terrible. But I believe all of the major sports leagues are going to at least attempt to put on some kind of, competitive sports in 2020, particularly because I think if they want to maintain, their television contracts and the majority of their revenue, they're probably in a pretty tight position to do that at some point.
Are you comfortable right now, Jake, watching both shows as of this week with everybody being tested on site and what WWE has done indoors and what AEW has going for them, which is being outdoors? Are you at a comfort level?
I mean, I think they're doing the best they can to minimize risks. I mean, WWE should be admonished for their approach, prior to a week ago. I think this, what they're doing now with testing at every taping and masks being a requirement and distancing in the stands and not having friends and family attend like they had been, at one point. These are all positive steps. And so I think the comfort level is higher. And as long as they're not, they're able to send everybody who came back infected home for the proper amount of time and then resume testing them on a regular basis, I think you have to make sure that people are following protocols when they're not at the show, right? It's how do you control what everybody's doing away from their job? And that's the hardest part about the whole thing. And hopefully testing will catch all of that. But as we've seen, the testing hasn't been entirely, I won't say entirely accurate, but people have tested both positive and negative on the same day, depending on how things have gone. And so I think they have to be as rigorous as humanly possible to try to keep that risk down.
And again, just I've said this before, but and this is just a factual statement, not meant to be leading the witness or anything like that, or to make it seem like I'm trying to convince the jury one way or the other on whether you should be comfortable watching wrestling. But wrestling's different than team sports. You can show up and do one taping a week or one live show a week, or do spend two days, and then spend 2 days taping two shows, and then spend 13 days apart or 12 days apart. And it's, while there's the group at ringside, they're not, it's, you're standing next to one person on one side and one person on the other, and they're not mingling like a server would at a crowded restaurant during an 8-hour shift, or somebody getting on a subway and people are getting on and off and on and off, and you're spending 10 minutes next to one person, then 5 minutes next to someone else, and you're crowded by a bunch of people, or an NBA game where you're sweating and spitting and breathing and coughing around a dozen other people or more, really 20, dozens of people counting your teammates, but then a different team every day, every night. And there's all this intermixing, and it's, hashtag math and hashtag science just is dumb now because people use it when they don't know what they're talking about a lot of the time. But the hashtag math, hashtag science on this is the more people you're around, every dozen more people you're around, it goes up exponentially. And that's why they, have had these, the really smart science people have said, no more than don't be around more than 30 people or more than 50 people. And we're restricting public gatherings and we need social spacing and 1/3 max or 1/2 max at a bar, because you're putting the wait staff and customers at great risk if they spend 8-hour shifts, five days a week, give or take, around a constant stream of people who are spending, 20 to 60 minutes around you. Wrestling doesn't have as much of that going on as the NBA or an open bar or restaurant does, because you're wrestling, a couple people. I'd say the people most at risk are the ones we've seen come down with COVID, which are the announcers who are around a lot of wrestlers. And I would say the referees also are at greater risk than, one or two wrestlers facing one or two other wrestlers and then brief interaction with others. And there is something about the sustained amount of time that you're around somebody that puts people more at danger. So there's just nuance to this. And so I say all that not to make the case, hey, no one should watch wrestling and feel uncomfortable, or that they should or shouldn't even be having shows. as much as just pointing out, as we make that conclusion for ourselves, as we evaluate this, every situation is different. And a bar and a restaurant's different than the NBA, which is different than an outdoor protest, which is different than an indoor rally, which is different than how WWE is doing it indoors and AEW is doing it outdoors. Every situation has significant differences that can change the risk factor by a lot. And that's kind of the frustration I've had with both WWE and especially AEW, with AEW and especially WWE, is they could have been doing other things that would have made everything exponentially safer, and including not having the needless microphone holding interviewers. That's just not essential to wrestling during this environment. So that's sort of my response to all that. I want to go back to Jason. You started all this, Jason, but an astute comment and observation from Channel Flipping, which I think is a service to AEW to know that, you know, not wearing masks just for the optics of it actually could cost them viewers.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, I want to close with this. I think, first off, Wade, thank you for all the content you put out. I mean, that's one of the daily things that I listen to. Your conversation with Rich Fan last week, I messaged him directly as being a gay man, and the things that he said, you don't hear that a lot on wrestling podcasts about support for the gay community, other than, you know, Rich Fan, you and your fellow podcast. I loved it. I messaged him, and I appreciate that. I just got to say, you know, if we take all that aside and we go back to the wrestling thing, do you think there's any conspiracy around Cody's match going on when it did? Because when I listened to you and your roundtable yesterday, you both said, or the three of you said, that was going to go on last. Is there any thought that Cody didn't want to go on last because of the heavily hyped Io Shirai Sasha Banks match? And I'll hang up and listen to you. Thank you, guys. Actually, it's really good to talk to Jake Barnett because I message him a lot. Him and Jason Powell do a lot of good things on ProWrestling.net. So thank you guys for taking my call.
Thank you, Jason. I really appreciate everything you said there. But from the topic you brought up at the end there, Jake, Cody not being in the opener and not being in the main event, it did feel like, say what you will about Kenny Omega and Hangman Page and how people felt about them coming into last fall and Dynamite's launch and the momentum Page had earlier this year. I don't think Kenny has any momentum. I think he's lost a ton of what people thought of him coming in, the way he's been presented and the way he's carried himself. It feels like Shinsuke Nakamura's retirement tour, other than, you know, he turns it up in the ring, but in terms of seeming invested in his character and all in and invested in trying to contribute to this product, just doesn't seem there to me. It doesn't mean it's not. I'm just saying it doesn't seem like it's there. And Hangman Page really lost momentum during this COVID stretch. It almost felt like, to me, maybe they don't see it that way, but waving the white flag to ratings, I think they're going to get destroyed again in that eighth quarter hour, Jake. And I don't blame Cody for not. If Cody didn't want to be up against that match in the main event, if he didn't have confidence in himself or Jake Hager as his opponent, and he was able to talk his way into not being in that final spot, I mean, I kind of get it. I wouldn't even call it a conspiracy as much as maybe a prudent face-saving move by Cody. Jake, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen EO and Sasha yet, although I have seen some very positive reactions to it on Twitter, and so I will assume that if he really did make a decision to put himself at the top of the second hour rather than the main event because he didn't want to be compared, that might have been a good idea, because the way that match played out, I thought they never quite got out of third gear, and the finish itself was fairly unsatisfying in my opinion, and so I wouldn't have blamed him for that, particularly if he knew, you know, the direction they were going with the match and the finish and how it ultimately it just didn't click for me. And so I won't say it's a conspiracy, but maybe it was just good planning on his part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, that's big stars do that. You know, they try to put themselves in a position to succeed and look good. All right, let's go to our next call here. And up next, we'll go to 709. Go with 709. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. It's Chris calling from Mount Pelee, Newfoundland. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thanks for calling. So what do you think of Dynamite tonight?
Decent show. I thought the women really took control of that. Listen to me. Hikaru Shida and Penelope Ford match was my favorite one of the night for sure. Kip Sabian tossing the cane in the air aside. A couple of minor things that really bugged me, though. How stupid is Jake Hager to think he won with Cody's music playing in the background?
Well, people have pushed the wrong button before. I mean, you know, he had the submission hold on. The ref calls for the bell, taps him. I mean, I guess we're supposed to believe, and I'll give him some flack on this, that he's wrapped up in the moment, you know? Like, he's so just in the moment that he's not, you know, hearing the music, or he just thinks the wrong music was played. I'm okay with it, but, I mean, anytime. I mean, just that finish, Jake. I mean, you can talk about what Chris was bringing up, but also add to it just the idea of it feels a bit like a cop-out finish. You know, well, we're going to protect Jake. We'll give Cody a win, but, you know, it's a situation where Jake didn't even try to kick out because he thought he was winning by submission, not getting counted with his shoulders down. Do you like that finish, or is it kind of too clever and feels like a bit of a cop-out?
Yeah, I think they overthought it to the point that it went all the way around from being clever to being really stupid because it makes everybody look bad. I mean, Cody at least appeared to have passed out in the hold while he was on top of Hager, which I think was the point. But, I mean, does Hager forget the rules of pro wrestling in the middle of the match? Like, did he not realize he was being counted out? I didn't really understand how that was preserving anything for Hager. I thought it just made him look like a fool who didn't realize where he was and what he was doing in that particular moment. I don't think a lack of awareness protects anybody in that state, to be honest.
It's like falling for a silly distraction as a way to make it seem like it's less bad when you lose by roll up from behind. I'd rather get punched in the face and knocked down and pinned than distracted by somebody waving their fingers from the stage and I'm dumb enough to take my eyes off the ball and get schoolboyed from behind. I mean, so there's a weird... It's just, you know, it's like, just, you know, you'd rather in a figure four leg lock pass out from the pain to show you weren't going to give up rather than tap out. And that is somehow better than passing out from the pain. There's just weird psychology that goes into rationalizing what is sort of protecting you or saving face if you're going to do the job. Hager is starting to, I think, show that he's starting to show what WWE saw behind the scenes when they didn't think this is the guy we're going to go with and build around. You know, I know he's in a different place now, age-wise, family-wise, career-wise, and this is a part-time gig for him. But I just think you sacrifice Hager. You know, Moxie already beat him. Just let Cody beat him clean. I was very open to Hager showing that he should be a top-tier guy. And, you know, I think he should be a utility guy. And losing to Cody in this situation on a non-major pay-per-view seems like a good thing for him, and I think protecting him at the expense of Cody a little bit here, even though Cody seemed resourceful and clever and still did win clean technically, the way Jake protested said Jake wasn't even trying to kick out, so it does take something away from Cody. Jake, where are you on Hager?
I it's never really worked for me, the whole MMA wrestler act. I mean, unless you are like a legitimate badass in the sport of MMA. It's very
Jake,
difficult.
I heard you say it's never worked for you, the MMA wrestler act. I don't know if you kept talking or we lost your signal.
I apologize. What I had said was that unless you are legitimately a badass or a top contender in MMA, it always comes across as just being really half-assed to me. Like, you know the guy isn't going to go in there and just beat the tar out of people as a legit MMA fighter. He's not going to take liberties with his opponent and do MMA holds that, you know, put his opponents unconscious. He's not going to throw legitimate punches. It feels like a weak substitute for an actual personality. And that's what I think Jake Hager has been missing, not just in AEW, but for the majority of his career. It's, you know, they kept trying to put him with other people. They tried to put him with managers, and he's a big guy. He's an impressive physical specimen. He's a legitimate amateur wrestler and a tough dude, but he's just never been able to win anybody over, you know, in a personality contest. And I think that's his biggest flaw.
And passion contest. I mean, it just doesn't seem to have passion for the game. You know, I mean, I think you fans pick up on that on television if somebody just really, really wants it. You know, Triple H really wanted it. Steve Austin really wanted it. Cody really wants it. On and on. Moxley really wants it. You know, you can tell when people, this is their life. They are absolutely going to do whatever they can to maximize their upside and make this work. And Hager sort of like shows up and, you know, drops his bag and says, what do you got for me? Okay. And then, you know, and it's not to say that, like, that's a personality flaw. In some ways, he might have his, you know, he might have be living a happier life and have everything in balance and have better perspective than some people who just sleep. That's not for me to judge. Whether, you know, Hager just showing up and kind of delivering a certain level of effort and passion is something he should feel shame for. But I'm saying flat out, if I'm a promoter, I know fans can pick up on that. And you have to be so good to get away with, you have to be Randy Orton good to get away with seeming nonchalant. And Hager just can't seem to be bothered to show that he's anything but sort of nonchalant about something that sort of he fell into because he looked the part. Chris, back to you. Any follow-up?
A couple of follow-ups on that. It's kind of like the Roman Reigns situation where the fans know he just isn't really a wrestling guy through and through. And, I mean, Jake hasn't been pushed anywhere near as much as Roman has, but the disease is the same. The finish, I thought it was kind of a neat thing earlier in the match where they went to the same sort of thing with the sleeper, and then Cody pulled it off at the end. But like even a tap out from Cody right after the three count might have made a better sell on that. Completely unrelated, though, and this is sort of an overall thing with AEW, what's really starting to bug me is they feel like that one kid in high school who made a funny joke on the first day of school and then keeps trying to make the same joke over and over again. Like, they're trying so hard to get back the little quirky things that people love. And, like, with Jericho on commentary and the four-man booth, which JR must be loving since he loves the three-man booth so much. And then you've got the Kenny and Hangman thing where they have a couple of really cute, funny, sort of quirky promos, but they keep trying to go back to that same well. And then best friend showing up in the minivan with their mother. And it's just they're trying so hard to hit that viral moment that millennial, I hate that word, demographic or whatever. And I think it comes across too often as they're pushing it too hard and they're going over the top, and it's starting to turn people off. You know, the sort of a hipster, oh, I used to like that before it was cool attitude, I think is really starting to bite them. And that's where they're starting to see this drop off in fans, because what was cool is just, it's not cool anymore.
I think that should be spliced and sent to Tony Khan and Cody and the Bucks and Kenny as a warning of something that I think is a theory that they should keep in mind as they go about their business day after day, week after week, is the way you put it. Jake, do you think there's some merit to that? I don't even want to restate it because I think Chris laid it out well.
Yeah, I think there is a certain, you know, sort of danger when you're riding the lightning of being the cool new thing, right? You have to transition from being that really interesting new thing with this very shiny new appearance to actually converting those people into sustained fans. And how you do that is probably different for every organization or everything, you know, in the public sphere. But I think in AEW's case, they're probably hitting a little bit too hard on some of the comedy and the quirkiness that I think might have initially attracted people to some of these characters, because it's different than what I think has been a mainstream wrestling presentation. But eventually you have to pivot and show people, you know, that these people are serious, right? I mean, you know, Chuck and Trent being driven up by their mom and being mocked by the announce team doesn't make them credible challengers for your World Tag Team Championships. I mean, is it somewhat character building? Yeah, I guess, but that's if you want them to be goofy people that are never taken seriously. And I think there's far too many characters who fit into that mold in AEW.
Yeah, yep. All right, cool. Chris, anything else you want to add as closing words here?
Yeah, just one last one, and I'll leave you guys to discuss and get to Javier, who I'm sure is waiting in line. they really, really need to clean up this tag team stuff. You had all of the commentators tonight talking about a 10 count and Omega getting out of the ring, and then he proceeded to be
Chris,
in there.
I heard you say you got to clean up the tag team scene, and then you faded out. Not sure if it's my
okay.
Could be my network is a little weak, but go ahead and restate that if you can.
Yeah, so tonight with Kenny in the ring, all of the commentators are talking about the 10 count and how it's a 10 count here, and then he's in there. I counted for at least a minute before they go for the pinfall again. Like, it's to the point now where if you're going to talk about the rules and not even make a show of enforcing them, the refs aren't counting with the partners in the ring. There's like Marco Stunt jumping into somebody's arms earlier in the night. Like, I know New Japan is slack on the rules, but you can at least see the fact is that if it's outside the ring, the ref will just probably not count when you come back in the ring. With AEW, I don't know what rule exists. Like, there's no penalty for not getting out of the ring. It seems like outside interference is sometimes allowed. And it's getting to the point where, yeah, it's professional wrestling. Yes, we suspend our disbelief. But it's just another one to add to the list of, yeah, Private Party and the Young Bucks have great moves and they look great. But if there's no structure to the match, if there's no rule, if there's no reason, then it just loses something. Anyway, that might be me being an old dude, but I'll let you guys discuss that, and you have a great night and stay safe. Thanks for all you do.
Sure, appreciate it. I appreciate it. I was going to agree with you, and then you said you only think you had that opinion because you're an old dude, so now I'm hesitant to. But I'm with you in the sense that I think the great matches have great structure. I think that when there's structure to a match and the wrestlers work within that structure, I think it is a better match. And I'm not saying that it's better for everybody. I'm saying that it's better for more people, a wider swath of the target audience. Some people don't care about structure, and they just want high spots and big moves and drama and near falls. And that can work when you're mega over and you've got a crowd in the palm of your hands, and it can work. But Jake, I think you're with Chris and me on this one, that when there's structure, you can still have every bit as much excitement. You just have to work a little harder. You know, I mean, you just have to make sure that you do it within the confines of the match, but there's nothing you can't do as long as you just work a little harder to do it. And then you have, I think the audience, you when there's an integrity to enforcing the rules and the structure that is there, it makes it seem like less of a farce. And it actually gives you more tools in the toolbox to work with when it comes to the drama of near countouts or disqualifications, which AEW doesn't like to do, but there's times when they probably should be based on what's happening in matches. Jake, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think structure definitely improves, you know, the overall perception of a match. And I think if you rewind back a week to Dynamite and you look at the FTR match with Daniels and Kazarian, I thought that was easily the match of the show. And I think it stood out as being different from what we had normally seen from AEW's tag division, because they did obey the tag rules, and their, you know, the different points of the match teams stood out when they actually bent the rules rather than standing out for obeying them, which is normally the case with what AEW does in the tag division. And so I think returning to a sense of normalcy in the tag division with the rules would improve the show overall, because they do tend to have, you know, probably two, maybe even more in some cases, tag team matches on any given show, because they have a lot of tag teams to feature on any given week. And the fact that there's almost no structure to the matches and no enforced rules, I think, hurts them a lot of the time, because you have the announcers trying to cover for it and failing most of the time, and you have the referees being made to look like fools. And I think by the time you get to the finish, you're just left wondering, I don't even know if that win was legitimate, because there were so many things that just kind of fell out of the sky and were not enforced. And so I really liked that FTR and Daniels and Kazarian match, and I'd like to see more like it on Dynamite on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and we did a poll on Twitter and just asked, you know, if you want to see more structure to tag matches, because I was like, you know, I generally didn't know, you know, I mean, are we at a point where that's just not important at all to people? And the results were overwhelmingly in favor of more structure. It ended up being 68% said yes, 8% said that no, that doesn't matter to them, and 24% didn't care either way. You got, a little better than 2/3 of the audience voting yes, they want more structure, that they would enjoy the match more if there's more structure. Seems like a low-risk decision to make, but then you have the awkwardness of pulling Private Party aside or the Young Bucks aside or whatever. But FTR are going to help in that regard, and Kaz and Daniels, and they can work either way, but I think their preference would be more structure too. So, yeah, I'm for that. They're going to be tag team wrestling. Be good tag team wrestling. All right, let's go to next. Let's see here. 708, you are up. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Good evening. This is Vincent from Chicago.
Hey, Vincent. So what did you not like about Dynamite tonight?
It was a pretty ho-hum episode. I felt like it was just another episode of AEW Dynamite. I didn't feel like it stood out with it being Fighter Fest or anything like that. I think what would have put it over, would have made it a little bit better for me is, and you guys alluded to this earlier, is if I would have switched Cody and Hager with the tag team match at the end. I would have put them in the main event. Considering that Io Shirai and Sasha Banks main evented NXT, in that final half hour, Sasha Banks was the biggest star on television between both shows. So I think if you had put Cody in the main event, like that might have the tables a little bit. Obviously, we don't know what the ratings are quite yet, but I would have liked Cody and Hager to be in the main event. And then you guys, I believe you guys said, your co-host said that he didn't care for the finish that much. And, I didn't feel like it was that great of a finish, but I feel like it did its job. So Cody gets the win, and then Hager, being one of the few big men on AEW's roster, you have to find some way to protect him. So he knocks out the referee at the end. He's able to keep some of his heat. And I was a little higher on the match than I think the two of you were.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I thought the whole, I thought Cody and Hager was a good, solid match. But I think my major criticism is Hager was worth sacrificing, so to speak, with a clean loss. I think he can come back from that just fine. And I think you want to protect the notion that Cody is a central top-tier star who is different than the Cody you saw in WWE. I think Cody against Hager looks to a lot of people as, there's people who watch WWE and don't watch a lot of AEW, and they see Jake Hager and they think mid-carder, and they see Cody and they think mid-carder. And you're going to reinforce that by having them go to essentially a stalemate type finish where one guy thinks he's won and he's, got half a case where you would understand why he would believe that. I don't think that does a lot to elevate Cody. And I think making Cody seem like a transcendent star who was held back and has momentum is a lot more important than a clever and compelling finish that might have been, too clever by half. That's my sense, but I don't want to, I thought the match was good. One little thing I love that Cody did is just in the opening seconds after the test of strength, when Hager just shoved Cody down, Cody didn't bump wildly. He took a bump and then he leaned against the bottom rope and looked frustrated and a little thrown off his game and trying to think, well, that didn't work. And how do I regroup? And it felt old school. Like that's the type of thing where I think Cody's watching old matches from the 70s and he's watching wrestlers when their number one goal was to make it look real. And part of making it look real is making it seem like you really care about the moves that where you make it seem like what's just happened to you has affected you the way it would if the match were real. And that's one of the things that I respect about Cody. So there were little things in this match I liked, but I'm not going to change the fact that, Hager doesn't come across as someone who's doing anything but doing what comes naturally at cruise control. I think he stepped up more here than he would, on a typical WWE TV match, but it still wasn't, I didn't think off the charts or anything like that. Jake, anything you want to add to anything Vincent said?
No, I mean, it's okay to have differing opinions on Hager and that match. I mean, it didn't win me over, but that I'm not a monolithic opinion. So I respect the difference of opinion. So I personally, I think Hager, like we talked about earlier, just seems to have a personality deficit and a lot of times an effort deficit when it comes to his, like, you look at his appearance tonight. He looked like he was out there in a pair of boxer briefs having a wrestling match. You know, I think there's just little things about the Hager act that just have never they never struck me the right way. And it's okay if other people feel differently. I think there's a lot of positives about him, but he certainly hasn't stuck out to me as a guy that I would consider making a champion in AEW at this point.
No, and I mean, he looked pudgy, and he looked like he thought, you know, for the different levels and ranges of what Jake has appeared in, this looked like lounging at poolside, enjoying a beer, Jake Hager, and, well, let me get a spray tan and baby oil to make up for it. And, you know, that's not – his look wasn't one that said I'm super serious about having a whole other chapter in my career where I change people's opinion on me, nor did his effort in the ring. That said, the frustrating part about him, and it's been there since, you know, day one with him, is the potential was there for much more. And he can get away with, you know, what seemed like a mediocre effort, whether he even realizes that's what he's doing or not. He can get away with it and still have a good solid match like he had tonight. Vincent, back to you for any other comments.
Now you make fun of me of being a negative nanny, negative Nancy, whatever you want to call it. But there were some things that I really liked about the show. Taz, I thought was phenomenal. Him calling out. Now, AEW hasn't been 100% clean in their handling of COVID-19, but Taz calling out WWE was pretty funny because it's been a complete, you know, it's been a complete mess over there. And
one might call it a horror show.
You know, I was just about to say that, but I didn't want to. You know, I didn't want to give the obvious pun. But
hey.
Eventually.
All right, go ahead. I'm guilty.
Eventually, the fit is going to hit the Shan, if you kind of get what I'm saying, for WWE in regards to that. But, Taz was excellent tonight. There was this one moment when they were previewing Moxley and Brian Cage. And they were analyzing Moxley's DDT and how, you know, he might have issues pulling the move off on Cage. And I had mentioned to him that ESPN used to do this thing called sports science, where they would break down certain plays in different sports, you know, football, basketball, hockey, and whatnot. And I told him a year ago that pro wrestling needs to do more of that, you know, take a few big spots and, you know, break it down analytically, you know, kind of like from a scientific perspective, like they did with the analyzing Moxley DDT. So I thought that was really, really good that they did that. And I also liked how the show was very colorful. You know, you made fun of Hager's blue trunks, but, you know, it kind of added to the whole show. It was very colorful. Someone who's maybe channel surfing, those colors are going to pop. Maybe they'll, you know, stick around, get a few extra ratings or whatnot. So I appreciate the aesthetics of it all. And so there was a lot to like from the show. All in all, it was a pretty ho-hum effort, though. But there were some things that I liked about it.
Well, you took away my chance to say, Vincent, what did you like about Dynamite? Because you just gave me a list. So I appreciate that. I don't think we're too far off on our thoughts on the show and the high points. I thought Taz was really good. And, you know, when we look at the early days of Nitro, Jake, you know, Eric Bischoff, you know, threw back at WWE. You know, this is where the big boys play. And, you know, there's famous moments. And if you listen back, there's a lot of more subtle things with Bischoff being brash on commentary. And I think the audience that pro wrestling that turns pro wrestling from doing pretty well to doing really well in terms of viewership and revenue, that audience usually comes up when a product feels cool. And when the people involved are brash and confident that there's a bravado to it, and Taz can turn that on. You know, that's been one of his strengths, and AEW can utilize that. And that's where, you know, I don't think Kenny's helping. You know, Kenny Omega's helping because they're just, you know, not a lot cool about him right now. And Taz is out there really delivering. So anyway, yeah. Anything you want to say on that, Jake?
No, I completely agree on Taz. I think he's been an effective promo his entire career, and he has a confidence and charisma about him that instantly draws you in. And I think spending years on commentary refining that has made him even better. And so I'm in total agreement on Taz. I think where you get into danger with Taz is when they have to hand Brian Cage a microphone. And that's a very mixed bag if anybody has heard him over the years. But we'll have to see, you know, how far they can go with it. I think Taz is hitting while the iron is hot with Cage coming in and you know, immediately being portrayed as the monster. But presumably they don't really want to knock John Moxley off of his perch quite yet. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but it seems like not a great time to do that. And so we'll have to see what happens with Taz and Brian Cage post Moxley.
Yep. All right, cool. Let's go to another call here. Who's up next here? 845. 845, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Pretty strong as of late. Tegan Knox, she has.
I think he's listening to the NXT post show, but he called us. I'll try one more time. 845, can you hear us?
They've tried to tell us, and I think they think they've
told us.
Well,
let's listen to our competitor here.
People don't really know. So I don't know. I just personally, I didn't think she was.
It's a little window into our other post-game show. So I encourage you guys to check that out. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast, because the PWT Talks NXT show that follows a half hour after NXT on USA ends goes head-to-head with this show on the live stream, both available to download. This on the Wade Keller post-show feed, search Wade Keller, and the other on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed, search PW Torch. All right, so let's go to our cleanup batter, and that would be 305. Javier, I believe this is you. How's it going?
How's it going, Wade? How's it going, Jake? How you two doing?
Good. Good to talk to you. So, yeah, what did you think of Dynamite, Javier?
Well, when Harry pretty much hit every single talking point I had, I knew it was going to be on for a long wait. So, but he, I felt the same way. I really loved the first match. I enjoyed it a lot. And then it was pretty much all downhill from there. I mean, not to say that it was like it cratered or anything, but it was, you know, I did like the women's match. That's actually one of the notes I had was that, I had no interest in Penelope Ford. And they've actually made me care for her. So in a rather short period of time too. So, kudos for them. I mean, you know, they could build people, But Wade, I'm actually amazed that I don't know if you're allowed to book something for next week or if this was booked with you in mind, and I'm surprised you haven't talked about it yet. Next week's All Elite Wrestling Puppy Battle Royal.
Well, we gotta leave something for you to talk about, Javier.
So I mean, was that made for you what? 'Cause of it.
Well, why do you think it would be meant for me?
Your Twitter, you know, it's wrestling.
Those laughing foxes were adorable. Great. Wade Keller, if you want to follow a diverse mix of retweets.
I mean, that just seems weird. I mean, do you have any idea what that?
No, I don't. Jake. I assume you saw that ad that next week they're going to have the first puppy bowl. It said after Fyter Fest. So, like, I don't even know. Is it going to be we throughout the show? And I misunderstood the ad. Like, you know, let's check in with the puppies, you know, like they do on Super Bowl Sunday. Or is it actually like some show on TNT? Like, I honestly don't know. And I haven't had a chance to even ask around or think much about it.
Yeah, I saw the ad and I saw Cody, like, post the photo shoot, I think, to his Twitter account where he took pictures with with whatever puppies are going to be participating in this thing. But I honestly, is it a charity thing? I'm so in the dark about what the nature of it is that I hate to even comment on it. I'm assuming it has something to do with dog adoption, which I think Cody is pretty passionate about, but I don't know the details or how it's going to be worked into the show. I can't imagine it being received well if it's weaved throughout the show, though.
I don't know either. So, Javier, I wish I had more answers. Do you know anything more than we know?
No, I was just worried that might be whatever Nyla Rose was going to do next week. That would have been, it'd be kind of scary for those puppies.
Yes.
Particularly since this week she almost got into a knife fight with Brandy Rose on Shot of Brandy. So I think I'm watching the wrong show.
Yes. So what else, Javier? Anything?
You guys mentioned that they didn't really promote much for next week. I mean, they did have some stuff with Joey Janela and Archer scuffling.
That's Archer,
Yeah, and they also had the Orange Cassidy Jericho stuff and, FTR and the Young Bucks in the ring when they have a match coming up next week. But it all really did feel like it was a soft sell and not a hard sell. And, you'd think it would have been better for a hard sell, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, I mean, it's fine that they had a brawl with Lance Archer and Joey Janela and Sonny Kiss and all that. But, I mean, it's not – that's a match where there's not much to be gained by promoting it. It's not a net loss to promote it, but that's not going to make or break, a rating point either way. And the Bucks coming out to play Peacemaker with FTR as Hangman Page enjoys a beer and Kenny pretends to smells it curiously and then pretends to drink it and then dumps it out. All that was weird. It plays to the character, but it was just weird. And then FTR being upset. I don't know. Some of that just felt sort of like, who cares? if Kenny wants to drink a beer, he can drink a beer. If he doesn't, he doesn't. I just don't see that as like a big plot point for a wrestling feud. So I don't know. Did that work for you, Jake, to hype next week?
I mean, I get the impression that FTR is going to be the team that eventually unseats Kenny and Paige at the top of the tag division, and that will set off the chase for the Young Bucks, and they're kind of playing this out over a longer term story, and I'm fine with that. I think the idea was that Kenny disrespected FTR by accepting their beer and then pouring it out, and although I don't think they did a particularly good job of getting that across on commentary, maybe everybody else has a different opinion, but it didn't really felt like they gave it a real hard sell, that there was a conflict brewing between those two squads as much as it was more of how are the Young Bucks and FTR going to agree to disagree next week in their match. And so I'm hopeful that they'll eventually start spelling out more to this story, but that hasn't always been the case with AEW. And so I didn't think it was bad, but it didn't really stick out to me as being the great start to a feud.
Yeah. Yep. Javier, back to you.
In the opening match, you had MJF yell at Wardlow saying you can't do anything right. Do you think that's setting up anything?
It felt like a bit of an overreaction. Yeah, I mean, it felt like a bit of an overreaction, but I mean, that's fine for a heel. Jake, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I think they made a point to kind of say that it could be trouble in paradise on commentary, but it could just as well be that MJF was, over the top after losing a match and he had to blame it on somebody else because he refuses to be accountable for anything. And so we'll have to see how they deal with it over the next couple of weeks. It doesn't really feel like they have anything for Wardlow to jump into if they were to split them up. And so I assume it'll just be a part of their act for the near future, at least.
Javier, anything else?
The only thing I would think is if they've got like another partner in mind for MJF, someone to replace Wardlow.
Sure.
I just don't know who that would be.
Yeah, my inclination is not to read too much into it, that it's just going to be an ongoing aspect of their relationship in a more long term, and it'll brew up and then settle down. And you know, I don't think it's Bailey Sasha like, where it's a central part of their storyline. I think it'll happen sometimes. Wardlow will seem frustrated, but there's not really a payoff in mind as much as planting seeds for something, a trigger they might pull way down the line. I could be wrong, but that's kind of my interpretation.
Yeah, and on the you were also talking about the commentary thing with Jericho. I really like Jericho on commentary, but he takes up so much oxygen that when he was doing was just him and Shivani in the early days of the pandemic, I thought it was great. But once you have like four people on there, that he drowns everybody out. And since everyone's trying to get awarded in edgewise, I think that.
How can you say that, Javier? How can you say that? It's Canada Day. How can you say that this would drown anybody out doing this for 2 hours? Go ahead, talk. Why aren't you talking?
Yep.
There's plenty of room.
Yep.
Take your space. And why are you sitting there? No one should be allowed to sit there. He's sitting there. Why is that allowed?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, Yes, it was the better part of 2 hours of that. Like I said, I'll take 2 hours every now and then. But I don't think you should do next week, and I think it should be a while. A guest match here and there, for sure. But sitting in for 2 whole hours, that was fun with him and Tony in the pandemic and the Georgia tapings. But otherwise, yeah, every few months. That said, I think he could do color commentary on a weekly basis. I just think he'd have to be a non-wrestler and tone it down. But what he did tonight is not a sustainable thing to do 2 weeks in a row, much less weekly. But I don't think they will. At least I don't think they'll do it weekly. They might bring him back next week, but they won't do it week after week. After week. After week. Go ahead, Javier. Anything else?
And I just, on the Hagar thing, I was not a big fan of that match. But I have to say, I really hate his wife, Catalina. There's something about her that. I mean, I don't know. I think MJF might have a rival on Biggest Heel on AEW right now. So if they could find something for her to do regularly, I think that'd be that might be fun.
All right, cool. Well, Javier, appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
All right, guys. Have a good night. Talk to you later.
Yep, thank you. Yep, you too. All right, Jake, before we get to the mailbag, which is next, tell people about ProWrestling.net and how they can hear more from you and how they can follow you on social media.
If you've heard me here before, I'm like the worst pitch man in the universe. But I am visible on Twitter at BarnettJake with 2 T's. You can find my blogs and coverage of Dynamite and once in a while SmackDown over at ProWrestling.net. And you can also hear me with Jason Powell on a weekly basis on the .NET Weekly flagship podcast for ProWrestling.net members.
You've got another minute and a half, Jake. Go.
No, dead air. That's all you get.
Check them out, ProWrestling.net and at Jake Burnett at 2 T's. Okay, cool. Let's jump to mailbag. Michael from Ohio starts us off and says, Kenny Omega is widely considered one of, if not the best wrestler in the world. I can't help but not get it. V-triggers, snapdragon suplexes, and forearms. People hate on Roman Reigns for a lack of moveset, but I can't help but think the same about Omega. I know he's extremely talented, but his shtick is kind of eye-roll-inducing and repetitive. What do you guys think? So, Jake, who's better, Roman Reigns or Kenny Omega, and why?
I think Kenny Omega is by far the better wrestler. I don't think anyone who spent any amount of time watching his work in New Japan could argue otherwise. I think Kenny has become a bit more limited in AEW. He certainly hasn't had matches of the length or with the variety of opponents he did in New Japan. And so perhaps comparing him to his work in New Japan is a bit unfair. For that reason, I just think it's a different quality and variety of opponents for him. But I wouldn't put him in the same class as Roman Reigns as far as ring work is concerned. I think they have a lot of the same weaknesses when it comes to their promo work and their character work, though.
Yeah, I just want to see him seem like a leader who cares about what's happening. And he just doesn't he just seems to be happy. I mean, I'm good for him. He just seems like a happy guy, but you know, who has the luxury to do what he wants the way he wants to do it. But step up, you know, be a leader, represent AEW, have a mission. And I just don't see it. And I get, you know, I get for what, if Zex hasn't seen his New Japan work, you watch, I mean, his signature moves are cool. The way that he, you know, leads into them is really distinctive. But man, when he's in the right opponent and the right setting and the, you know, he's in a main event situation, not promo wise, and that's still a test for him to take, but in terms of delivering that epic match, he's as good as it gets of this generation. And you just wouldn't know it so far. You know, I mean, he's had moments, he's had some great singles matches. Well, great's overstate. I mean, he's had some really good singles matches, but I don't think he's had that kind of great signature, that is a match of the year, that is the identity of AEW yet. And if you would have said, you know, 9 months in that would be the case, I you know, 9 months ago, I don't think people would have believed you. So just something for AEW to, you know, and Kenny to think about. I think he can be an asset, and I think he's important to them. And I don't think it means much, honestly. I mean, do you think it means much at all to AEW's success so far?
No, I don't. And I think he should mean a lot more, unfortunately. I think there's been a bit of an issue in terms of what the fan perception of Kenny Omega was coming into the organization and how they've used him. And I think they've diminished him in a great deal by not making him one of their featured performers who's in regular, you know, major league singles programs. I think he feels like he's taken a step back into the tag division. I think he's been focusing his energy other places administratively. It's hard for me to say on the outside looking in, but certainly Kenny Omega has not been as big of a key to AEW's success as I imagined he would have been.
All right, I'm next. This is Zach in Texas. Night one of Fighter Fest was outstanding. The opening tag team match had a genuinely surprising finish. The women's tag match was better than it had any business being. Main eventing with that banger tag team title match was a very smart move. While I'm disappointed I have to wait an extra week for Moxley and Cage, Taz's spirited promo more than made up for it. I truly appreciate that direct hit he landed at WWE. Night two should still be great next week. I'm very curious about Nyla Rose's surprise. I'm guessing it's a female manager, but who do you think it's going to be? Jake, any thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, wait, you cut out on me. What was the question there at the end?
Yeah, what do you think the Nyla Rose surprise is going to be?
That's an open question to me. I mean, I hope it's not puppy related, as one of our earlier callers indicated, but I want it to be something that immediately puts her back into contention for the AEW Women's Championship, because I think they went with Penelope Ford, you know, for the Fighter Fest show because they felt like they might have been going back to a rematch too quickly. But I think now's the time. You know, they haven't really resolved the issue between Sheeta and Rose, and I think that's their best match at the moment.
All right, Joe from New York is up next. Joe from New York says, this show was built as Fighter Fest and came across as an average TV show. First of all, this show should have been on Bleacher Report for free, just like last year. Because if it was on Bleacher Report, it could have been three hours and commercial free. That would have made the show feel special. This show was just one match after another, and nothing felt important. Jericho was never serious on commentary. He was just over the top, and it hurt the show. The TV title match was good. Plus, Taz on the mic was good, calling out Moxley and taking a shot at WWE, saying, we don't run a sloppy shop. Telling Moxley he had a case of the chicken shits, that's what I'm looking for, a guy calling someone out and taking a shot at the competition. Boy, has AEW wasted Kenny Omega putting him in a tag team. Is there any wrestling company out there that can book good TV? If I wanted just a bunch of wrestling matches, I watch ROH. Wake up, AEW. Whoever booked this show should be suspended from booking for 30 days. So two back-to-back opinions differing greatly, but you know, I get where Joe's coming from. I mean, some of the stuff he just said. If this show had been on Bleacher Report Live as a three-hour special with that, you know, the pacing of 3 hours, I mean, it might have worked, but it's tough without fans in attendance. I think we've gotten used to a weekly TV show having, you know, an audience reacting, and that I think that helps. It's a net positive for me, even if some of their reactions sometimes feel corporate or imperfect, but or put on. But I still think it's difficult to have a major show vibe. I think that's that's the biggest thing that we haven't had. You know, WWE did what they could with WrestleMania, and, you know, they had the cutaways to the cinematic matches and such. But, you know, I don't think that's solvable. You know, I think that if it was 3 hours on Bleacher Report Live without commercials, the lack of crowd might have even stood out more. I'm not sure. What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I think the last AEW pay-per-view, Double or Nothing, you know, kind of suffered from that. It felt like the energy had been sort of sapped out of the room. And I think all WWE shows, you know, particularly the pay-per-views, have felt that way as well. You know, we've gotten accustomed to watching shows in this format over the past couple of months because it's just been all there is. But if you, you know, just kind of hit pause on one of these shows and then go back and watch any show that's in an arena, it's a night and day experience. And it, you know, it's an unfortunate side effect of the reality of our situation, but it is a struggle to really, you know, cement, you know, what makes wrestling special in an empty arena. And I think you might be able to make up for that, if you had some really compelling writing and really good promo delivery, and you excelled in other areas that wrestling shows tend to fall down on a lot of the time, but it really, we haven't really seen that in a standout way, and so I think wrestling will continue to struggle until, you know, maybe they learn how to better adapt, or maybe we don't see a resurgence until we get crowds back. I really don't know what to expect at this point.
All right, up next, Chris A. says, Jericho on commentary, matching limited commercials, reasonable matches to start. What was left to cause people to channel surf or flip? I didn't, but I don't normally anyway. But short of front-loading the main events at the start of the show, could they have done anything better? I don't think they did anything wrong, but if they were strictly booking for ratings, they probably could have tweaked a little to try to compete more. Yeah, Jake, what would you have done if, you know, 2020 hindsight, or what would you have said this afternoon going into the show that they should do, that they could have done that they did not do, that would have helped prevent channel flipping?
I don't think they did anything wrong from a presentation standpoint. I think having Jericho on commentary probably helped. I think having limited commercial breaks, you know, reduces people's tendency to flip away. But if there was anything that I thought they could have done better, it would have been, you know, building up some of these feuds in a stronger fashion in the weeks leading up to the show. I think a lot of them just felt like they lacked of some importance. And so that would have been where I would have spent my focus. I think they probably did all the little things in terms of production about as well as they could.
I would have had more pizzazz. I would have had short videos going in and out of commercials, 10-15 seconds with a narrator, and graphics and add just energy that they don't have without a live arena to hyping the matches. You know, Cody Rhodes, bang, 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 couple talking points, a snippet of him against Jake Hager, couple, you know, video in the background, you know, have energy on the screen, be showing clips while Hager's warming up backstage while the narrator's talking about what's at stake. And then boom, you know, you go to the next commercial break and you're talking about the main event, and give us a reason to care about the best friends and not just have it be ironic, wink, nod, isn't this cute? Mom's driving them in the minivan and Kenny doesn't like beer and they're good with each other. Like, make it seem important. Talk about AEW as the home of major tag teams. The best friends are on a hot streak. They've earned this title shot. People don't take them seriously. Do they take themselves seriously enough? You know, will they step up and show that they belong in the main events, or are they going to be content hugging each other? There's talking points. There's bullet points. There's a professional narrator voice. You can have in 10, 15, 20 seconds going in and out of commercial breaks, give people that hook to stay tuned. And they didn't do any of that. And I would say that the interview they did with Kenny and Paige was counterproductive. If I was excited about that match, that made me less excited. So I don't give them a good grade at all for just pointing the camera at the ring and assuming the, you know, the wrestlers are over and everyone tuning in would stick around. I think they should have seemed like they were working harder without spending a lot of time. You know, I don't think you do 4-minute video packages on all these matches, but 10, 15, 20 seconds going in and out of breaks for each of the upcoming matches would have, I think, served them well. So that would be my suggestion, not just 2020 hindsight, but I think a pretty solid net gain. If you decide to do that this afternoon going into the show, it takes a little extra elbow grease on the production side, but, you know, take some time away from their you know, being the elite stuff and deliver some of that during the show. All right, up next, Jeff in Syracuse. Good evening, Wade and Jake. Sheeta continues to put on high-level matches. Has she entered the conversation of the top women's wrestler in either AEW or WWE? Penelope Ford, Nyla Rose, Britt Baker have all had their best match with Sheeta. What are your thoughts? Thanks for the great content. VIP is the best value in wrestling. Thank you, Jeff. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Get details on all the benefits, podcasts, archives, newsletters, more. Jake, Sheeta, best women's wrestler in either AEW or WWE. Can you make that case based on track record lately?
I think she's been one of the most consistent women's wrestlers in either company. I don't know if she's the best one. I think WWE probably has the strongest roster of women's wrestlers, in the U.S. And I think at their best, at their peak, they're probably a little bit more well-rounded as performers than Sheeta is at this point. But from a pure ring work standpoint, I think she's been, right near the top, since AEW has made her the champion and she's taken off as a character. So I give her credit for that, but I wouldn't put her as the best anywhere right now.
I want to see more, but I mean, I think you can have that conversation and I think there needs to be a bigger body of work, but I think she's moving in the right direction in terms of giving AEW that centerpiece, athlete and wrestler who fans can look at and go, all right, I'm excited to see the kind of match she has with a variety of opponents that AEW builds up for her. And I think that's a good spot to be in. And so far she's delivered. All right, up next, Kyle in Tinley Park, Illinois. I feel some wrestlers that are mixed into the tag division are missing out on being singles competitors. Pentagon and Phoenix are the two that come to mind. I think they'd both be better off alone. It's weird to reflect back on All In and think that Pentagon took on Kenny in such a highly regarded match. I always thought Pentagon was going to be a main focus of the company, considering the huge response he got on the indies. Do you think there are other tag team wrestlers missing out on making waves in the singles division? Thanks for answering my question, and most importantly, thank you for your years of service covering our great sport of professional wrestling. Thank you, Kyle. I appreciate it. Jake, Pentagon definitely comes to mind as someone. It seemed like there have been indications they are high on Trent, and he's had some singles matches, and I think he's somebody who could have, an upside that might not be on people's top three list, but, you don't know till you try. Hangman Page, obviously, at the other half of the Kenny Omega situation, might be missing out in terms of being a single star. I don't think anybody – Scorpio Sky, I guess, Kaz and Daniels, I think, are right to be a tag team, but I think Scorpio Sky, they pushed for a couple weeks and put him in there against Jericho and then just sort of forgot about him and moved on, and I think people are disappointed in that. He's someone else who comes to mind. Anyone else, Jake?
Nobody really jumps to mind other than those you listed, unfortunately. Yeah, I think you really nailed it there.
Yeah. All right, good. Let's see here. Going to Shay from Brooklyn. Night one of Fyter Fest went 5 for 5 for me. The opener was a very good way to start the show. Different sizes and styles. Every opportunity Wardlow has had in the ring, I feel he has really taken advantage of. The guy looks great, explosive and agile. I feel that a lot of people are starting to see him in a new light. Taz's promo is amazing. I think Taz wins for moment of the night, by the way, given the emails and callers. He's been better every week, and the Taz Cage Act is starting to gain that big deal aura for me. Am I crazy to believe he has a good chance to win the title in 2 weeks? Kudos to AEW Booking for making me really buy into Cage as a real threat to Moxley's reign so soon. Tag matches in AEW are refreshing. So many different styles and acts. There's a lot of life to the division. I went into tonight believing the best friends had a chance to win. I love their wholesome entrance with Trent's mom driving them to the show and telling them to have fun, along with Justin Roberts casually saying, driven to the ring by Trent's mom, during introductions. Cody delivered another fun title defense. I'm a huge fan of Cody, but even I wasn't looking forward to Hager as a challenger. I have to say, over the last couple of weeks, they've done a great job showcasing Hager as a legit tough guy. Still, it was a surprise to me how much I loved the match. Those two worked really well together, and really well and smart together. Great show tonight. So, Shay from Brooklyn, anything you want to respond to there? It's just someone, who the show really worked for.
I think you're going to have a diversity of opinion. That's just the way it is. So I don't fault anybody for enjoying or not enjoying things. I don't, it's hard for me to say that they really nailed it with everything tonight, but I'm not looking at it with everybody else's eyes. And so it's going to work for some people.
And finally, Javier researched the Puppy Bowl. He researched it, and he says nada. Seems to have caught everybody by surprise, and there's even a question of whether or not it would be during or after Fyter Fest. The ad that said after the one online didn't. The one that aired on TV said it would be after the one online did. Also, let Jake know you have a personality deficit will be my new go-to put-down going forward.
Well, I'm glad I helped somebody tonight. There you go.
Sounds good. All right, follow Jake at Barnett Jake with two T's. Follow me at The Wade Keller. If you want pure wrestling on Twitter, follow me or follow our brand at PW Torch. We put up polls on a regular basis and link to our articles and podcasts and retweet things of interest wrestling-wise. Of course, check out pwtorch.com, our main website, for latest news, live TV coverage, hits and misses, columns on the major TV shows, including Javier's Impact Hits and Misses. So much more at pwtorch.com, including links to all of our free and VIP podcasts. And then be sure to check out prowrestling.net. Jake Barnett's part of that website with Jason Powell, who joins me tomorrow on the Thursday flagship. If you've got topics, questions, or comments for the flagship, feel free to email them in at any time, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And we may get to your question when we record the Thursday flagship tomorrow, Thursday. Jake, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, Wade. Always a pleasure.
Yep. Take care.